Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coast to Cast, a podcast on coastal science where we meet scientists and ask questions that don't usually appear in published papers. My name is Giovanni, and today I'm here with Professor Andrea Dal Paus from the University of Padua. Andrea's research is quite amazing. He focuses on the interactions between physical and biological processes shaping coastal landscapes. He is one of the key persons in the field of biomorphodynamic evolution. And he does field observations, crazy laboratory experiments, numerical modeling. Very interesting scientist. And if you ever need someone to do an introduction for a keynote speech, Andrea is certainly the best. Hello, Andrea. Welcome to Coast to Cast, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
Hi, Giovanni. Thank you so much for your invitation and for the very nice and too generous introduction. Thanks a lot.
How is it going? Is it busy time for you? A lot of teaching, a lot of research?
Busy time, really a lot of teaching, too much teaching. I would say a lot of research, but actually less research than I would like to do. And many, many, you know, administrative things which take a lot of time.
Let's go to our questions. And I want to ask you how you started in coastal estuarine science. You're at University of Padua, which is a center where there's a lot of scientists working on this topic. So tell us, what is your position?
This journey into coastal and estuarine research started back during my master's thesis in civil engineering at the University of Padova. And when I told Professor Andrea Rinaldo that I would have liked to do my master's thesis with him, and Andrea offered me a thesis opportunity on tidal channel networks. From here, my passion started for coastal and estuarine research, and this happened in 2000, so 24 years ago, a quarter of century ago, which means I'm getting old. But I think that, well, this was, you know, one of the lucky things of my life, because this started, my career and allowed me to meet a lot of people, make friends in research, like you, Giovanni, sharing same, you know, passions, ideas, and interests. It started this way. Since then, I kept, you know, working on coastal systems. And something also that I think was important, in 2008, I moved from the engineering department to the geosciences department. And at the very beginning, I was kind of lost there, I would say. But then I think that this was, again, as I see it now, it was like, a lucky thing which happened to me, because I started looking at morphologies and, you know, coastal environments from a different perspective, starting from sediments, starting from below, rather than starting from above the surface. So that was great.
One of the key struggles in the life of a scientist is balancing personal life and academic work. How do you deal with it?
Okay, so I think that balancing personal life with academic work is always very challenging. In my case, how do I manage it? I don't know. But for me, it's challenging because I have a big family, my wife and four kids, aged 16, 15, 12, and 9. So I'm kind of busy, but I would say that, I mean, this, of course, enriches my life a lot, and I wouldn't, you know, change anything from this point of view. And so the answer is that I don't know. I mean, I don't know if someone has really a very precise answer, because I think that there are, different things that we should say. I think we do very nice job. Let me share this story. Once, Clive Jones, the famous ecologist, who basically introduced the idea of ecosystem engineers, told me that doing, well, being a professor at the university, doing research, is the best job ever, but you have to do it 24/7. And I think that this is kind of true, meaning that well, you can study what you want, you can do research on what you want, but sometimes it's difficult to stop thinking about your research or, things that you are studying, even when you are supposed not to think about that, but they come to your mind. And so sometimes it's difficult, to balance your personal interest with this research, which is coming to your mind
Yes,
also when you
it
don't
is
expect it to.
challenging. I know what you mean. My son a lot of times tells me stop thinking about work. You must see that my eyes are just
So
lost.
my wife used to say, "What are you thinking about?" And the answer couldn't be like, Tidal network or soft matches. Usually it was nothing, which was even worse. But I think that, at a given point, I was able to manage this balance. And also, of course, my family understood that, I was putting a lot of effort in trying to balance things. Well, but I don't have the answer. How do you do? I don't know.
What about your interests out of work?
Well, I like a lot, I have passion for sports and for spending quality time with my family. As an Italian, of course, I love soccer.
What's your favorite
And
team?
my favorite team is AC Milan, which is the only team in Milan, of course. So I also used to play soccer a lot. I don't play soccer anymore. I still enjoy, following soccer and sports in general on TV. So when I stopped playing soccer, I picked up tennis, and now I love tennis. Also, I really enjoy having, going around with my family on trips, because this, I think that this allows us to create, say, lasting memories. So I really love spending time with my family and love sports. And yeah,
Let's go
I'd
back to
say,
science.
yeah.
What do you think of our ability to predict long-term coastal morphodynamics? We make predictions until the year 2100. Are they useful? Do they make sense?
I think that we made a lot of progress in our knowledge on coastal systems. We improved our skills, our ability to describe, I would say, coastal ecosystems, because I like both, focusing on the physical and biological part. But I would say, despite these improvements, I think that we still have limitations, and these limitations prevent us from being able to really predict, say, coastal dynamics on the long term. Then, of course, if we want to, I think that we are good in providing like the behavior, the possible behavior of coastal systems also in the very long term. But then I think that a detailed description still needs, we still need to improve our knowledge to provide a very detailed description of a point by point description of the landscape. Also, because we make a lot of assumptions, for example, for the forcings. Sometimes we know we have information about the surface, but we lack information about the subsurface. And when you start eroding, there are layers of sediments that in most cases are unknown. And also, well, as to models, we always try, well, we try to mimic the real world, but Of course, we have to make hypotheses and to approximate real processes. I mean, this is to say that, of course, we are doing really a great job, but I think that there is still a lot of room for improving our skills. Also because, I mean, customer for dynamics, the term customer for dynamics was introduced like 50 years ago, more or less. We are still in the infancy of our research in this field. And I think that this is also good news. I mean, we can do, there's room for further improving our knowledge, our skills, our ability to provide predictions, because we need, of course, predictions and modeling is the only tool that we have.
I agree. I completely agree. Tell us about your favorite paper. Is there a paper that changed your career?
Okay, so favorite paper. I have many, but well, I would go back to the beginning. So at the beginning, I started with a few review papers. One of them was by Friedrichs and Perry. It was Marsh morphodynamics, and that, you know, was very dense of information. Studying that paper basically made my the folder in which I had PDFs or names or papers exploding, because then, you know, it's like kind of an exponential increase in the papers that you like to read. So that was one very interesting. And then I have to say that I really love paper by John Allen, both reviews, but also I think that the papers that he wrote in the 90s, those like zero-dimensional models, but they were, you know, kind of good for those times. I remember that one of the papers that I wrote and that I like most is a paper in JGR, in which Simon Mann, Luca Carniello, and I, we developed this analytical solution for, say, Marsh morphodynamics. It's a very simplified model, which, you know, it's a 0D, but I think it captures the behavior. And the idea of writing this came out because Matt Kirwan had just published a paper in which he was, showing that Marsh elevation and Marsh inflation rates, they adapt to sea level rise, but there is a lag between, which is, if you want, it's intrinsic in the idea of morphodynamics. There is a lag between the forcing and, say, changes in the landscape. And then I remember that I had read something similar, and it was a paper by Allen dating back to 1990 in the Journal of Geological Society, and it referred to constraints in measuring sea level from Marsh accretion, and everything was already there. So, well, he had like he used to do like conceptual models or behavior models, but I really think that his papers and his research was great. So at least this couple of, and of course the papers are started from by well there were three papers that Rinaldo Lanzoni, Marani and Fagerazzi wrote in 1999 on tidal networks, that I would say that I know those papers by heart, so I know every line.
Earlier on, you mentioned the simple models, behavioral models. Do you work more or do you prefer simple models or very complicated ones?
You know, I like all type of models. What I really like is when you, well, starting from, say, the set of complete equations, you can, you know, drop some of the terms, and you realize that for the problem you want to study, they were not really necessary. So I like when you are able to simplify things without oversimplifying models. But if I have to choose between a model which contains all processes and a model which, limits its focus on fewer processes, but nevertheless the result is, is good, I prefer using simplified models. What I don't like is when sometimes you have too many processes, you probably you don't understand, you don't fully understand all of them, and then when you get the results, you can disentangle who is driving what. So, well, I like I think that simplifying models without, as I said, without oversimplifying allows you to get a better understanding of the governing processes.
Okay, so
Yeah.
usually I ask guests here to, if they want to speak about the topic of research, if a research topic they really like. But in your case, actually, I would like to ask a specific question. I know that you and also some of your colleagues together have worked on Venice, on the Venice Lagoon quite a bit. We've all heard on the news that about these incredible engineering works to protect the city of Venice. They're quite spectacular. I have no idea how much must have cost, and the maintenance of these works must be incredible. But the question that I have for you is, what about the lagoon? What happens in the lagoon as a result of these engineering works? I'm sure they will protect the city, the famous San Marco Square, but what happens to the lagoon?
Oh, wow, this is a very nice question. This is really what we are focusing on now. So, as you say, the MOSE system, so these barriers that are built were built at the inlets of the Venice Lagoon. They disconnect the lagoon from the sea. So when water levels outside the lagoon rise, they can close the gates and protect Venice for flooding. And this, of course, is a great result, is a great achievement. Venice needs to be protected from high water, and this is not under discussion. So this to be clear, I mean, to be clear from the beginning. So I think that this system really is very well, does its job in protecting Venice. The thing that is also important to note, however, is that it has negative effects on the lagoon hydrodynamics and morphodynamics. And some of these effects were probably either neglected or not accounted for when the system was designed. So what we found, and if you want, I mean, to someone who is not in coastal hydrodynamics, this might seem counterintuitive, but then when we tell this story, our colleagues immediately understand what we are talking about. So one of the things that is important is that when you raise the gates, you keep water levels very low into the lagoon. And the water levels are such that when you have wind waves, the bottom shear stress is much higher than in the hypothetical case in which the water depth was higher. So keeping the water depth so low, of course, protects Venice, but promotes the erosion of bottom sediments, and then these sediments either, they go into channels and need to be dredged, or when they open the gates again, the sediments are flushed out into the Adriatic Sea. And then another, so basically
So there is a
erosion
net
is
loss of sediment.
exactly, and this increases the loss of sediments, which is already quite high because we estimated years ago when Marco Marani led this project, which was the morphological plan of the Venice Lagoon. We highlighted that the loss of sediment was what was of about 600,000 of cubic meters per year. So it's kind of quite of an important amount. And but also what we showed is that, and again, this is very intuitive when you think about that, but probably nobody thought about it. So we first noticed that, at least in Venice, which is a microtidal system, marsh accretion is driven by storm surges. So 30% of the sediment which is deposited over marshes is deposited during storms, even if nowadays storms occur only during 30% of the time in a year. So 30% of the time is responsible for 70% of marsh accretion. And then it's straightforward to realize that when you cap the tide, when you keep water levels low, marshes are not flooded, they don't receive sediments, and so their capability to face sea level rises is strongly decreased. And so the point is, of course, we know that what we needed to disconnect the lagoon from the sea to protect Venice. Now the model does this job, even if they plan a different system, the disconnection would have been necessary anyway. Okay. But because we were talking about money, official and unofficial costs are around 8 billion euros for the MOSE system. But other 8 billions were used to preserve, to restore the morphology of the Venice Lagoon. So if we now know that the MOSE has these negative effects and we don't do anything to counterbalance them, I think that, well, the message is that we lost 8 billion euros spent in the past years to preserve the morphology of the lagoon. So I think that we need to invest money on preserving coastal morphologies. The problem is that coastal protection is very costly, and governments and societies often don't, well, either are not aware or don't think these are important. They are not aware of all the ecosystem services that coastal landscapes provide, and we need to convince people and then governments that these ecosystems are
Well,
very important and we need to preserve them.
very complicated, very complex problem, really.
Yeah.
It's difficult to think of a solution that satisfies all needs. Let's change topic slightly. What's your take on machine learning?
Well, machine learning, I think it's very fascinating, I have to say. And I think it's bringing new insights in many fields, because computers can learn from data and make predictions. I think it's a very useful tool. I still I still don't have clear, still not clear to me whether we can really base predictions on previous data, or if these tools might have some, how can I say, biases into future predictions. So I still have this, sometimes I question myself whether or not a machine learning could, for example, replace models that we use, or if we still miss some descriptions. But and then, of course, I think again, I really like understanding processes. So I think that if you only use machine learning without a previous experience on processes, probably you miss the description. So probably you might be able to provide predictions, but probably I don't know if you would have the sensibility to understand which are the driving, the governing processes. So, but I think it's a fantastic, powerful tool, and we need to further explore it.
Let me ask a different type of question. I will ask now a prediction from you. Can you predict a major advance in coastal morphodynamics to happen over the next 10 years? In which area do you think there will be some major breakthrough?
So I would say that rather than a prediction, I hope we will be able to improve our understanding and provide like digital twins for coastal systems. So actually models that really can reproduce actual conditions and future conditions for coastal ecosystems. And I think that these say these digital twins need to account for processes of different types. So I have now some experience on coupling physical and biological processes, but for example, there is also a chemical component that might be important also because so probably with models we will have to answer different questions from different fields of sciences. So these new type of models need to be like very interdisciplinary and allowed to provide information on morphology, on biological activity, on and also they might be tools to evaluate the ecosystem services provided by these by coastal landscapes and give a value, a monetary value to these services. So I think that I hope that in 10 years we will really be able to provide models that will really be digital twins.
Best or worst advice you ever received in your career?
So the best advice I think well, during my PhD was to, how can I say, at that time we didn't, use the term interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary, but I was told to try to move in between sciences. And this is what I tried to do at the beginning when we, try to account for the effect of vegetation. I'll do it in a simplified way in the first morphodynamic models that I developed with Andrea Marco, Rinaldo Marco Marani, and Stefano Lanzoni. And then I think that I also recall this advice when I as I told you, when I moved to the Department of Geosciences and I started working with this colleague of mine who is a sedimentologist, Massimiliano Ghinassi, and we I think that I can say how we perfect or our interests perfectly match, meaning that as I said, I used to look at morphologies from above, I used to look at them from below, so from the sedimentary record, and when we perfectly meet at the surface. So I think that again, but it's like, coupling, say, geomorphology with sedimentology. And for example, I think that, as an engineer, I think that sometimes engineers miss like the geological description of the landscape on one side. So they miss like these capability to describe landscapes, also if you want from a qualitative or say conceptual point of view. On the other side, maybe in some fields of geology, a quantitative description, coupling their knowledge with a quantitative description of the processes is also needed. So I think that, again, moving between sciences creates connections.
Now some quick questions, and I know you will hate this first one. What's your favorite band, music, composer?
Giovanni, no, I'm disappointing a great music enthusiast like you. So, and I know that you love music. I also love music, but actually, I cannot tell you a favorite band. When I was at the high school, I really loved listening to the Beatles and the Doors. Now, say that I like every type of music. I really like listening to music. So my daughters love music. One of them, the oldest one, used to play the harpa. The second plays the violin. So, but I don't have really a favorite, band or type nowadays. So
All music.
be patient with me, Giovanni.
What about your favorite dish? Or if you cook, do you have a signature dish?
So I would say that from what I really like is barbecue. So Louis, my son, and I really, because also my dad used to do that, we love really very much meat, the barbecue. Then of course, I can, as an Italian, I cannot say I don't love pizza. I love pizza.
Excellent.
And I love cakes. So now sometimes when I come home, I find my children who have cooked like cakes or pancakes, or I don't even know how they learned, probably on the web, but I'm very, when I come back and I find cakes, I'm really very happy.
Latest book you read?
Okay, now with a bit of delay, I'm reading a book that my dad wrote, and it's about his infancy and how he got from a small village in the mountains to becoming a professor. I have to say that he had kind of a tough life. So, and he wrote this book, and I always promised myself that I was, going to read it, and little by little I'm reading it, but it this kind of a very personal thing that will not, be, splendor said the family. And probably the previous one was I told you that I'm playing started playing tennis, so I read Open by Agassi.
Yeah, apparently
You
that's a
know the
great
last one.
book. It has already been mentioned here. So
Do
you
you?
know the first one. Yes.
No, it's a very good book, and it's really this, the story of this struggle, this battle that he carried out with tennis. So before starting reading that, I thought it was one of the tennis players who won, most for in his period. But then when you read the book, it's like a sequence of games that he lost in some way or another. And you say, and it seems that games that, of course, games that he lost were much more than games that he won. Probably this is true for most tennis players, but I like.
What about your favorite movie?
Favorite movie. Favorite movie, well, a movie that I liked a lot was Forrest Gump. I don't even know why, but I really liked that. I saw it when I was at the between the high school and the university, and I love this idea of running, through life, and keep running.
Keep on running. Okay, Andrea, thank you very much. I don't know, is there anything else you want to say? We're approaching the end of the show, but if there is anything that you would have liked me to ask and I didn't ask, please go ahead and say it now.
No, what I have to say is that I thank you. Thank you a lot, Giovanni, for this opportunity, for having this, you know, talk with you. And thanks a lot. And I hope to see you soon
I
at
also hope to
conferences
see
or.
you soon. Thanks to you for joining in and taking the time. I know you're super busy. Highly
No, it was
appreciated.
a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And thanks to all our listeners. And we'll meet again with our next podcast. Bye bye. Ciao.
Bye.